If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's 1931. Dewey Flack is 17 years old when he steps off the train in Gauley Bridge, West Virginia. He came from North Carolina, one-way ticket in hand, a promise, send home money. His parents and five younger siblings are counting on him. It's the worst year of the Great Depression. There are no jobs back home. The tunnel project in West Virginia, it's paying work, it's hope. 2 weeks later, Dewey is dead. His lungs filled with white silica dust, so pure it turned them to stone. The death certificate says pneumonia. It's a lie. They buried his body in a mass grave under cover of darkness. One of at least 169 workers dumped into trenches like cordwood. His family back in North Carolina thinks he ran away. For 88 years, they believe Dewey abandoned them. Then NPR finally locates his niece, Sheila Flack Jones, in 2019. She weeps. She says, "I'm heartbroken that my family died, thinking that he ran away, and they never knew the real truth." Welcome back, friend, to Hometown History. I'm Shane Waters. Dewey was one of the approximately 764 workers who died at Hawk's Nest. Most of them were black migrants fleeing unemployment in the segregated South. A congressional investigation called the conditions hardly conceivable in a Democratic government in the present century. It would be more representative of the Middle Ages. The company paymaster had said it plainly. "I knew they was going to kill them within 5 years, but I didn't know they was going to kill them so quick." This is the story of the Hawk's Nest tunnel disaster, America's worst industrial catastrophe, deliberately buried for generations. Tonight, we're bringing it back to light. Gauley Bridge is in Fayette County, West Virginia. The town sits where the Gauley River meets the Kanawha River. Population in 1927, fewer than 1,000 people. That year, Union Carbide, one of America's largest chemical companies, creates a subsidiary called New Kanawha Power Company. Their plan? Drill a 3-mile tunnel through Gauley Mountain to divert the river and generate hydroelectric power. But here's what makes this project different. Core samples show the sandstone is 99% pure silica, a valuable commodity for Union Carbide's manufacturing process. They're not just building a power plant. They're mining a fortune in silica while the tunnel gets dug. Two projects for the price of one. Union Carbide hires Reinhardt and Dennis Company, a contractor from Charlottesville, Virginia. Official groundbreaking happens March 31st, 1930, just 6 months after the stock market crash. To understand what happens next, you need to know what the Great Depression did to America. Black unemployment in the South is double or triple white rates. In northern cities, it hits 50 to 60%. The congressional report later captures it perfectly. Workers were driven by despair and the stark fear of hunger to work for a mere existence wage. When Reinhardt and Dennis send recruiters through Virginia, North Carolina, and the Deep South, promising work on a tunnel project, men come. 3,000 workers make the journey. Three quarters of them are black. They come with one-way train tickets and letters to send money home. They come because their families are hungry. Any parent would understand that desperation. What they find in Gali Bridge isn't hope. It's hell with a paycheck. The company houses workers in segregated camps in nearby Veneta. Black workers sleep 12 to a room in 8 by 10-foot boxcars. White workers get 4 to a room in better housing. Pay starts at 40 cents an hour. Then it drops to 25 cents. Black workers are paid in company scrip, only redeemable at company stores. White workers get cash. Picture yourself in one of these boxcars, 12 men, 8 by 10 feet, that's smaller than most bathrooms. You're sleeping in shifts because there's no room for everyone to lie down at once. The walls sweat condensation. The air is thick with body odor and kerosene fumes. This is home. The men work 10 to 15 hour shifts, 6 days a week. They need to advance 250 to 300 feet per week. It's brutal pace. But there's steady work, and that's more than most of America has in 1931. Then the drilling starts. The tunnel cuts through 99% pure silica. The contractors use dry drilling methods. No water to keep down the dust. Imagine being inside that tunnel. You're drilling through the crystalline quartz, and every strike releases microscopic particles of silica into the air. The dust is so thick, workers later testify, they could not see an electric light 10 feet away. One survivor says you could practically chew the dust. Medical journals documented silicosis by 1910. The Federal Bureau of Mines had issued warnings. There's no mystery here. The companies know exactly what they're doing. By early 1931, just months after work begins, dozens of men are dying. Workers emerge from the tunnel covered in white dust, ghostly pale, stumbling. Gali Bridge earns a nickname, the Town of the Living Dead. In February 1931, the local Fayette Tribune reports a great deal of comment regarding the unusually large number of deaths among the collared laborers. Deaths totaled around 37 in the past 2 weeks. A local judge issues a gag order. The story disappears. But the dying doesn't stop. The silica particles are crystallizing in their lungs. Every breath is drowning in sand. The tissue hardens. The lungs turn to stone. Death comes slowly, over weeks or months, suffocating, exhausted, unable to breathe. Men are literally drowning in their own hardened lungs. When workers start collapsing in the tunnel, Reinhardt and Dennis fires them. No severance, no medical care. Men too sick to work are simply dismissed. Many die before they can leave town. Some make it home and die there. Bewildered families watch strong men waste away in weeks. The company hires a local undertaker named F.M. Faulkner. He's paid $55 per body, but not to provide proper burials. His job is disposal. He buries workers in mass graves, three pits, crude trenches, bodies stacked like cordwood, sometimes in wooden crates, often just wrapped in cloth or burlap. Most graves are unmarked. At night, Under cover of darkness, they bury the bodies. 169 workers that we know of end up in these mass graves. The actual number is almost certainly higher. Many men simply disappeared into the Appalachian soil without record.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The death certificates lie: pneumonia, tuberculosis, acute bronchitis, anything but silicosis, anything to avoid questions, anything to keep the project moving forward. Back home, families wait for letters that never come. They wait for money that never arrives. They don't know their sons, fathers, brothers are dead. They think they've been abandoned. In May 1931, barely a year into construction, a doctor named Leonidas Harless examines dozens of workers at the Gauley Bridge Hospital. He recognizes silicosis immediately. The death rate is catastrophic. He writes to Union Carbide's main office detailing the conditions. Union Carbide ignores him. Dr. Harless writes to the State Health Department. He contacts the contractor. He tries everything he can within the system to stop the deaths. No one listens. The tunnel keeps drilling. Men keep dying. The tunnel is completed September 1931. 18 months of construction. 3 miles long, hundreds of millions of dollars of silica extracted. Approximately 764 men dead. Union Carbide and Reinhardt and Dennis walk away with their profits. The dying continues for years. Silicosis has a long tail. Men who worked in that tunnel keep dying through the 1930s and into the 1940s. Eventually, families start asking questions. By the mid-1930s, hundreds of lawsuits begin appearing in the West Virginia courts. Survivors and families file claims against Union Carbide and Reinhardt and Dennis. The numbers are staggering: 476 official death certificates for silicosis. Hundreds more claiming injury. The companies fight every case. They drag proceedings out. They wear families down. They settle, when they settle at all, for pittances. $130,000 total distributed across hundreds of claims. Most families get nothing. But one case goes to trial: Jones versus Reinhardt and Dennis. A Kanawha County jury hears the evidence: the dry drilling, the deaths, the mass graves, the falsified death certificates. In 1936, they return a verdict: $344,000. It's the largest silicosis verdict in American history. For one brief moment, it looks like accountability might happen. Then the West Virginia Supreme Court throws it out. Statute of limitations. The companies had deliberately delayed the trial until they could use time against the plaintiffs. The verdict disappears. That kills the momentum. Most other cases settle for almost nothing or get dismissed. The companies pay less than $1,000 per death on average for men who died building their fortune. While lawmakers debate, a freshman congressman from East Harlem gets involved. Vito Marcantonio. He's young, progressive, known for taking on corporate power. He hears about Hawk's Nest and demands a congressional investigation. January 1936. The House Committee on Labor begins hearings. Survivors testify. Doctors testify. Families testify. The undertaker testifies about the mass graves. Documentary evidence piles up. The dry drilling methods. The death certificates. The company scrip. The firing of sick workers. The committee's report is devastating. They call the conditions hardly conceivable in a democratic government in the present century. It would be more representative of the Middle Ages. They document 476 deaths officially attributed to ciliosis and acknowledge the real number is almost certainly higher. The congressional investigation exposes everything. The truth is finally in the official record. For the first time, the full scope of the disaster is documented at the federal level. Nothing changes. No criminal charges are filed. No executives go to prison. Union Carbide continues operating. Reinhart and Dennis continues taking contracts. The federal government passes no new workplace safety laws specific to silica exposure. The congressional report becomes a historical document. The deaths remain unpunished. For 80 years, Hawk's Nest stays buried. The mass graves remain unmarked. Families believe their missing men abandoned them. The disaster fades from public consciousness. Then in the early 2000s, historians begin excavating the story. West Virginia researcher Patricia Spangler locates survivors and family members. Genealogists trace descendants. NPR produces investigations in 2019 that finally reach Dewey Flack's family. When Sheila Flack Jones, Dewey's niece, learns the truth 88 years later, she says that she's heartbroken that her family died thinking he ran away, and they never knew the truth. She wanted to make sure people knew his name and knew what happened to him. September 7th, 2012, a historical marker is finally dedicated at Hawk's Nest. It reads, "This tunnel was built to produce hydroelectric power. The work was done in dangerous conditions that caused acute ciliosis and the death of many workers." In 2015, the West Virginia Division of Culture and History begins formally documenting the mass burial sites. Researchers work to identify victims and notify families. It's not justice. 764 men died building a tunnel for profit, and their deaths were deliberately hidden. No one was ever held accountable in any meaningful way. But at least now, we remember them. Dewey Flack was 17 years old. He came from North Carolina with a one-way ticket in hand, a promise to send money home. Five younger siblings counting on him. He died 2 weeks after arriving in Gully Bridge. His family thought he abandoned them for 88 years. 764 men died in Hawk's Nest Tunnel. Most were Black immigrants fleeing Depression-era unemployment. They came because their families were hungry. They died because companies valued profit over human life. They were buried in mass graves, their deaths falsified, their names deliberately erased. This is America's deadliest industrial disaster. It happened in Gully Bridge, West Virginia. For generations, no one remembered. Now, we do. I'm Shane Waters. Every hometown has a story. Tonight, it's when American workers died for profit, and the truth was buried with them. If you found this story important, share it with someone who should know it happened. Good night, friend.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.